All right, so we'll call this meeting to order on the Academic Performance Framework Subcommittee. I guess Steve, are you Bianca today?
I'm gonna call roll if I can. Okay, President Sensman.
Here.
Vice President Mendoza.
Here.
Superintendent Douglas.
We've got Ashley Berg.
Dr. Crockett.
Here.
Ms. Espinoza.
Here.
And Mr. Twist is absent. All right, you have a quorum.
All right. So I'll just get started. The presentation and draft were linked online and sent out to the board members yesterday afternoon. So what we've been working on for the past really year now is revisions to our academic performance framework. The last subcommittee meeting we had, the subcommittee approved our recommendations to align the board's academic performance framework with state accountability and reduce duplicative processes on our charter schools. And so that is what we've done, and that's what I'm presenting to you here today. I'll just start off on slide 3, the academic performance standards. So this is how overall ratings would be calculated under the proposed revisions. There really are one indicator, state accountability, with two measures. The first one being the A through F letter grade, and the second one being state designations for school improvement. It's my understanding that while the Department of Ed is working on revisions to the state accountability system, they are trying to create one accountability system that would incorporate both state and federal accountability requirements. So if at some point in the future letter grades encompass this federal accountability requirements, we would really just need to use letter grades. You'll see that an A, B, and C school would now meet the board's academic expectations, that board's academic standards, if they are not identified for school improvement. D does not meet, and F falls far below. Any school that is identified for improvement and or targeted support would not meet the board's standard. And if a school is identified for improvement and or comprehensive support, they would fall far below. So as of right now, the state has to evaluate performance of all of its schools to identify schools required to submit improvement plans. And so the targeted support aligns with what was before focused schools. So these are schools that have gaps in their subgroup proficiency rates or have persistently low grad rates. And comprehensive support is consistent with the priority label. So this is schools that fall in the bottom 5% of the state. What we've tried, and I've had ADE's Chief Accountability Officer look at all of this and look at the language to make sure that we're capturing all schools, because we realize that schools that don't, you know, half of our charter schools do not participate in Title I, and so they wouldn't be eligible for targeted or comprehensive support, but they're still going to be identified as needing improvement at that level. They still have to be included in that analysis. So right now, I mean, this, we're trying to be as transparent and easy to understand with what the expectation is, and changing the line so that it's very clear D and F schools do not meet the board's expectations. And if you're in school improvement, you don't meet the board's expectations.
Winnie, can I just ask, So a lot of times we'll see schools coming to us that are like a B alt or a C alt. So mm-hmm. how does that
yep.
in this work out, or is that going to be through the A through F? That'll be accounted there.
Yeah. So all ADE has to assign a performance designation or performance level to every single school in the state, regardless of what students they serve, what grade levels they serve, how small they are. So ADE has to figure out an appropriate accountability or achievement profile for every school. Statute requires, if you see the note at the bottom here, that the Department of Ed use appropriate achievement profiles for accommodation schools, alternative schools, and extremely small schools, and may and has in the past developed profiles for online schools and others. So I put a note here. In the past, they've used letter grades. So they had the A alt, They had the A alt and the A digital learning. They had the letter grades and then specified which accountability system they were under. If the department decides not to use letter grades for the alternative system or for small schools and use something else, then we'll just align ours with the equivalent achievement profile. But without knowing, I didn't want to put anything in, but we would want to keep it consistent where the average and above meets the board's expectations.
Whitney?
Yes?
Hello, by the way, good morning. This is Freddie.
Morning.
I was curious if there's a benefit to dropping down to just four levels instead of keeping five. So if we need to bridge two of them together, or if we could actually keep five categories. In terms of exceeds, meet, does not meet, or far below.
So you want me to just put B and C together on the same line?
No, I'm wondering, well, two things. One, if there's a benefit to us only having four categories as opposed to five, I think there is a difference between a B school and a C school. But then secondly, if we are going to drop to four, I would be kind of curious, would an A and B both exceed and just see me?
So I guess, Freddie, this is Kathy. So you're suggesting which of those categories would you eliminate then? If you wanted to go to four categories versus?
No, I want to go to five. It's already at four.
So then what would you add then, I guess? Right.
I would distinguish B from C. I'm just trying to get like a B plus school or somebody that's really close to an A school is dramatically different from a school that's like a C minus or just barely squeaking into the C category.
Could you be a B school and exceeds the standard?
Not under this proposal. So you wouldn't necessarily want A and B to have the same overall rating. You just think we should add another, like meets, exceeds, and then A would be something better than exceeds?
Yeah. I don't have a word for it. I was thinking maybe B could just be above standard, something like that, because A is exceed, I like. I don't know, just when I was reading it and then when I was looking at it again now, I just think, again, a B plus school and a C minus school are very, very far apart. And then I was just thinking, even in a classroom, I mean, a B is above average. A B doesn't just meet the standard. That's kind of the definition of C. A B is better than that. Maybe meeting plus, something like that.
I can look at Okay. I mean, we above could work. We can look at some different terms and even look and see if there are other states that have five levels and what they call them. The only, and I think there is a difference between B and C. One thing is that, you know, what is the difference between meeting and being above and how in your oversight and supervision? Like, there really isn't going, based on the proposal I'm making.
If you meet or exceed, it gets you to the same place.
Right.
Okay.
Because this is more for our internal purposes, right? Like, would a school say, you know, I'm an A exceed standards? Do you remember how we used to have the A plus schools and, yeah, you know, that sort of mm-hmm. thing? Is ADE going to have any program with that?
No. So, based on the last conversation that I've had with ADE staff, we'll just continue to have our letter grades. So, you can just have A, and then it obviously be identified if you're in a school improvement. But we are going to bulk up our state reporting or state report cards. So, if the charter board would like to include that information on the report card, that's something we could look into. But this is not something that we would report on in our report card.
I mean, I guess one differentiation in the proposal where the board is going to have some discretion is in expansion requests. So, but the letter grade is going to be provided to the board in any information that we give to the board, since it makes up such a substantial part of the board's rating. So, you're still going to have, the school is still going to have their letter grade, is what I'm saying. You'll still be able to see that they have a B as opposed to a C. It won't just be their meeting, and we're not telling you to what extent they're meeting.
Right.
So, Freddie, are you thinking that from a charter operator standpoint that while, you know, it's kind of semantics, you know, that we're talking about here, that from an operator standpoint, it would be more meaningful to have a more kind of robust word for B, or?
I guess that's my concern. I'm not necessarily sure yet how it all plays out, but I think, you know, labels matter to the families and certainly to staff in terms of motivation. I'm wondering, again, I was thinking even A for Arizona is now doing like their A schools, but then they're on their way to A schools if you're B. I just think like a B school that's really, really close deserves some credit for that as opposed to just meeting the standard.
And Freddie, would you?
But I don't know if that actually has any real teeth down the road or if it is just semantic. I don't know.
So Freddie, are you looking to say, you know, X, Y, and Z charter is an A school that also exceeds the charter school board's academic performance standards? Or would you, is that like your concern, is that you want to make sure that you're not just saying we're a B school that only meets the standard?
Right, I'm wondering how that will play out, or if parents will, I don't know exactly how. Is this just internal, or will there be some level that it plays out more?
So
I can tell you from the department standpoint that we wouldn't use these. But
so it would just be the letter grade, and that's that.
And Freddie, I think that what we're trying to do is use the letter grade and then determine what letter grade meets the board's standard. So
right.
It would be, you know, even when thinking about our annual reporting on charter school performance, we would want to highlight their letter grade and then say they're an A school, so they exceed the board standard, or their B school. So so we're trying to use their letter grade as the basis, and then we just have to set the mark for what is acceptable for the board in high stakes decisions.
Okay. I don't think I need to belabor it more. I think if we could find a term that met what we were trying to say, but also distinguished, that would make me feel slightly better. But, you know, I understand what this is saying too.
Freddie, this is Carol Crockett. You're thinking of B as a needs plus, basically.
Right.
Would that language work?
I think it would.
And me?
So not.
I think that's pretty common for distinguishing those where letter grades aren't used.
So then, let me just not to go down a rabbit hole on this, but then so say to Freddie's point, like you're a high B. So then, would you be a meets plus? But if you were say a B minus, more on the borderline of C, would then you just be a meets? Is that what you're talking about, Freddie? Or would it just be if you're a B, you're going to be a
above?
Meets, yeah, you're going to be above standard. Or a meets plus or whatever.
Yeah, I would think any sort of B. I wouldn't start distinguishing between the pluses and minuses in one letter grade. Where I was going is a B plus is very different than a C minus, and right now they would be in the same category.
Okay, well, why don't you guys want to look at maybe like what other states have done, and then we can, do we need to make a decision on this today, or can we revisit this? And we kind of have some other terminology that we would be comfortable with, or?
Well, I am hoping to bring whatever you approve today to the board at its June 13th meeting. So I can, I think if the subcommittee decides that they do want to have a separate category for B, I think that above standard might be better than meets plus, so that we're not using the same meets plus. It just might get lost if you're looking at.
And that doesn't kind of have any trickle-down effect that screws up other things in the performance framework that I'm not thinking about.
We would just have to add that into every area where we're talking about meeting the board's expectations.
Okay.
So that's not a big.
So it's not like trickle down, that, because I can't think of anything that would.
No.
Okay. Do you want us to make a motion on this piece right now to incorporate it, or do you want us to do it all in like one kind of motion, or do you guys want to capture that? What would be the best way to?
You might want to go through the whole thing, and then because there may be something later on that might affect what you're talking about here.
Okay. All right, so Freddie, remember that. So if you need to make a motion later,
I'll remember it.
All right.
Okay, moving on to slide 4. So I just wanted to go through the letter grade, the state accountability system. If we are going to be emphasizing the letter grades in the board's framework, I thought it was valuable to understand the state law that was just passed that revises the state accountability statutes. ARS 15241 requires the annual achievement profile for schools and LEAs to include at a minimum the following. So this is what's going to be included. This is what is required to be included in the letter grades. Multiple measures of academic performance or other academically relevant indicators of school quality that are appropriate to assess the educational impact of school during the academic year as determined by the State Board of Ed. Academic progress on statewide assessments in English language arts and math. Academic progress on the English language learner assessments, the ZELA. Progress towards college and career readiness for all schools and LEAs that offer instruction in any grades 9 through 12. And ADE is currently working on the new system. The State Board of Ed has a board retreat June 13th, the same day as our next board meeting, where they will look at the A through F letter grade accountability system. Moving on to slide five, subject to final adoption by the State Board of Ed, the Department of Ed shall determine the criteria for each school in LEA using a research-based methodology developed in collaboration with a coalition of qualified technical and policy stakeholders. So ADE has historically had and still has an accountability advisory group. I have gotten myself onto this group and will continue to participate. At a minimum, the achievement profile shall include the performance of pupils at all achievement levels, account for pupil mobility, account for the distribution of pupil achievement at each school in LEA, and include longitudinal indicators of academic performance. And then the achievement profiles must be based on an A through F letter grade system, in which a letter grade of A reflects an excellent level of performance and a letter grade of F reflects a failing level of performance. Prior to Senate Bill 1430 being signed by the governor this year, statute identified the level of performance for each letter, A through F, and an F was a school that had been had received a D for three consecutive years, was determined to be a failing school. That definition no longer exists. So it'll be up to, it'll be a policy decision on whether, how they determine, how they identify failing schools moving forward. And then slide six, state designations for school improvement. The Department of Ed must annually measure proficiency rates, subgroup performance, grad rates, and other academic indicators to identify all Arizona public schools required to implement targeted, comprehensive, and other supports necessary to improve school performance. So this is important for next year. When we don't have letter grades, we will have state designations for school improvement, which we won't be issuing an overall rating. The board has already decided not to do a rating for next year during fiscal year 17 based on this past test administration. But the board will have that information available. That will be the most recent state assessment data available for the board. And slide seven, substitute academic performance standards. So the subcommittee had asked that we look at creating some way for a charter school that serves a special population to have unique academic goals incorporated into their charter instead of using the traditional framework. And so when looking at this and talking with ADE, since all schools will be given some sort of performance level, we didn't think it was necessary to say not rated schools or K-2 schools because they should be given a state accountability performance level. But there are schools that have come before the board that serve populations of students, for instance, high percentage of special students requiring special education services or a high percentage of homeless students that don't fit the alternative model, but also don't necessarily fit the traditional accountability model. And so it's not, it's a few number of schools at this time, but we've seen just in the past couple of years that those schools that do serve a high percentage of students that fall into one of those categories have struggled with the existing accountability system, both the state and the board's academic performance framework. And the board has asked for other data that they are tracking to show that they are making, that they're improving pupil achievement and making progress. So we've created this other indicator that a charter holder that operates a school that serves a special population that does not have an achievement profile established by ADE under H, so that's the alternative schools, the extremely small schools, and AOIs, may petition the board to adopt 4 to 6 school-specific academic goals, including the metrics and targets that would be agreed to between the board and the charter holder, incorporated to their charter contract, and then evaluated annually to determine whether or not they're meeting or making progress towards the board's expectations.
So Whitney, my understanding is if, like, let's say one of the charter schools that is offering instruction to this different population, the ADE will still give them a letter grade. So will you be using those letter grades at all, or?
So the default would be the overall ratings being calculated, as you saw before, the letter grade and their improvement status. That would be the default. They would have to request to the board and be approved to use different goals, and then the board would not be using their letter grades or their improvement status to determine whether or not they're meeting the board's expectations.
So Whitney, you mentioned, like, the homeless population, I think. So this would also be like the school for autism and the deaf school would fall into this criteria, this bucket, I guess, of...
Yep, so we tried to look at what is currently falls under the criteria to be an alternative school, and what are some of the populations that the board has recognized have different needs but aren't alternative, and then tried to align it with that. So right now, 70% of your population has to meet one of the criteria to be an alternative school. So we thought 70% of your population has to be identified as needing special education services or homeless. Those were two populations that seemed to be obviously missing from our state alternative status that were included in the definition of alternative schools in other states. But if there is another population that we think would fit, I think we could discuss that, but...
Well, we're not going to define what that is, right? Like, a school would have to petition us to... So we're not... I mean, we're going to say 70%, but I mean, are we going to define it as deaf, autism?
No, we just put... The only two things I put is identified as needing special education and students that are homeless. And then we can define what that is. So how you show that you have 70% of your students needing special education, you can give us your data from ADE that shows that 70% of your students need special ed, or, you know, qualify for a Group B weight or something like that. And then there is a federal definition for homeless students under McKinney-Vento that can be used, that schools can use to demonstrate that they are serving that percentage. So the board wouldn't be proactively identifying schools for to use these different measures and asking them to apply. It would just be an option available. So if a school, and this is trying to, you know, incentivize innovation in these other models, if a school is has opened or is interested in opening, has gotten a new charter and plans to serve students with autism, then they can come to the board and request and show that they're serving, you know, over 70% of students that have special education services, and that they would like to use 4 to 6 other measures. And then those measures would have to be fall under specified indicators. So you would have to, they would tell us what data they're going to use. We would work with them to identify what the targets would be, but they would have to have something for student achievement, student progress, college and career readiness, and climate, I think, was the fourth one. They would be able to identify a measure under.
Well, just a comment, I like this because I know since we, you know, since we authorized the school for autism, I've been concerned about how we're going to deal with that and stay consistent with, you know, with how we deal with other schools. And so I really like that we would have something that would recognize kind of the special
special needs or just special populations that would be the, you know, the majority, you know, super majority in that school. So I really like that we're incorporating this into the framework.
I have a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Freddie.
I also like it. I think this can be part of our schools telling their own story. We're definitely looking for alternative ways to present their data. I'm wondering if we need to limit it to right now. We're saying only those schools that serve a special population or don't have a profile. Couldn't we make it more accessible and broader?
Well, and I do want to make sure that we are clear that they will have a letter grade, they will have a profile. It's just that profile is not specifically designated for their type of school.
Right, so what I've, in H, 15241H specifically talks about the department using appropriate achievement profiles for alternative schools and extremely small schools. And about 120 of the board schools are alternative schools. So I think if we're trying to align with state accountability, if the state is required to develop an appropriate measure for alternative schools.
Right.
And then practically, I don't know that I know that the board doesn't have the capacity to do this for 120 of its schools. That's why this is so limited. And so I'm trying to get at those schools that are not alternative schools under the current criteria, but the board has recognized has a, you know, different needs and doesn't fit under the traditional model either.
Right. No, I support that. I guess you've looked at it much more closely than I have. I'm just wanting to say, is this going to cover different educational philosophies or the tribal schools, or that there are a lot of them that we have recognized that don't meet alternative but yet don't fit the model?
Under the proposal, it wouldn't, unless they met special ed or the homeless criteria, they wouldn't be eligible. So I think when looking at tribal schools or rural schools, we are aware of how they have performed in the board's previous framework, hoping that the proposed changes more clearly define and differentiate between schools that are failing and schools that are average, and then also trying to find a way for the board to look at, you know, compare alternatives for when considering a renewal of a school that's not meeting the board's expectations. You know, can we provide the board with additional information about surrounding schools? We have been doing that, and whether or not that school's the best option for the students in the area. So that's not explicitly incorporated into this proposal, but we have been trying to provide that information to the board, well, at least as long as I've been here.
No, I definitely appreciate that. We've recognized it, and I just think it anywhere that we can be really responsive to that just obviously helps.
Well, and also go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
When
I was going to say, a second concern I have is, can it be a multitude of factors, like could a certain percentage be homeless, a certain percentage be special ed, or is it just that bar has to be met in a category?
The way
or could it be a conglomeration?
Yeah. I believe the way it's currently written out, it's either or, it's not both.
Okay. And then I was also maybe just hard pressed at my school this year, but is it static? Like if a student's status changes over the course of a year, would a school be able to address that? Or is it kind of set at a certain point in the year and that's when the data is collected?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I guess we would have to think through when they can apply, what data they would use. Like, is it the prior year's data, or is it 40th day, or when is the, you know, when can they get the McKinney-Vento data? And then also, how often do they have to show that they're still meeting that criteria? That hasn't been...
Right, that's where I'm getting it.
Winnie, I can work with you to get that information.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we may look at 5-year interval reviews or renewal of their contract. We could look at those times when the board does have to review the performance of the charter. Those could be times that they have to, you know, recertify that they're meeting that criteria.
Yeah, I'm just thinking specifically of a high school, you know, kind of a smallish high school. If 3 or 4 kids, you know, get kicked out or end up homeless, that's a massive percentage change for them. Mm-hmm.
Well, and this would be ongoing. So they would be used, these unique goals would be incorporated into their charter contract, and that's what they would be held accountable to until those were removed from their contract. So I guess that's when we need to figure out what the timeline would be. And we want to give schools time to show that they're meeting the board, or meeting their expectations. And so we wouldn't want to annually look at what their goals are and if they should be changed, or if they, you know, aren't, if they no longer meet the 70% criteria, having to switch them back to the other accountability system. We would want to keep it pretty consistent for, at least 3 to 5 years or so. But we would need to specify that in the request.
And can I just ask, the 70%, what is that based on, or what is the...
So that's the, for alternative status,
okay.
It's currently set at 70%
okay.
for the alternative criteria, and so I thought it would be consistent. Other authorizers that have an alternative framework that they allow schools to use, it varies. I know Colorado Charter School Institute has it at 95%. DC Public Charter Board has it at 60%. So the definition of alternative is different for different states, different authorizers, and then that threshold is also different.
Okay.
So I thought it would be consistent with our state practices for alternative status.
I like that justification for it, because I think the more consistent we are, not having, 65%,
yeah.
45%, I just think that's, I think that sounds like a reasonable approach to that number.
If I can I go back to Freddie's comment about the tribal and rural schools? So I know that's one of the superintendent's main concerns, that we post a lot of those schools. Are there alternative models that other authorizers are using that would address that situation?
I have not seen that. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I just haven't seen an authorizer have that in their definition of alternative. I know that there are authorizers that will have mission-specific goals that are incorporated into their framework. But when we think of the size of the board's portfolio and what data actually exists and what the data collection looks like for some of those measures, it seems quite difficult.
But I think if ADE maybe wanted to change what your definition of alternative was, you know, or what that looked like.
You tell me. The statute.
Yeah. Or change the statute of what, you know, to incorporate,
mm-hmm.
you know, Native American populations or reservation, you know, type schools, then I think maybe, you know, that can be reflected here. But I think mm-hmm. trying to do something within the framework might be a little difficult.
Sorry. I also, I would try to frame it. I would caution against talking specifically about creating separate measures for a certain type of student, but more thinking about how is the board, you know, thinking about, is this school providing a choice and improving pupil achievement? How can we compare? We're giving them, in the rest of the proposal we'll see, we're hoping to give schools more time to show that they're meeting the board's expectations. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, how does the board consider the other choices available to those students in their area? So it's really more about them being rural and not having a lot of options.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think to say, to your point of like 70% is in line with, you know, kind of alternative mm-hmm. status of kind of staying in line with kind of what's in statute, what ADE does, you know, and not trying to drill down so deep that we do end up creating, you know, all these different avenues. I think the more consistent we can keep it with, you know, with the alternative, how you guys are looking at alternatives, how the statutes look at alternatives, and then, you know, what we can do with these that I think are truly unique populations, you know, that should be dealt with separately, you know, like the deaf school, like the autism school, where, you know, it's pretty self-evident that's just a very unique population. It's not like other schools. And, you know, it just has that high special needs population. I think we should look at them slightly differently, but I think we should still, like, we're having there, like, have specific academic goals for them, you know, as well. And I like that giving the schools the option to kind of pick, you know, so it's not us saying you will do these five things and you know, those five widgets don't fit into what you're trying to do with that population. But I think it gives, in my opinion, I think it gives the school some flexibility in figuring out what is that criteria that would work best. How do I shine the best, you know, given, you know, how I'm going to meet those academic goals. So as a school, and I'm not an operator, but I would think as a school having those options, kind of to pick what am I going to be best at, I think, you know, kind of helps all around. To go back to Freddie talking about how do they tell their story and how do they demonstrate their story, you know, to the best of their ability. So I really like this, and like I said, I really like staying consistent or kind of, you know, following the pattern of, you know, the alternative statutes that drive this. So I really like this, and, you know, dealing with the deaf, and especially when the autism school has been something I've been worried about for a long time of how we're gonna look at those schools. So I like that we're doing it this way.
All right, moving on to slide 8, meeting the board's academic performance expectations. So right now, in order to meet So there's a difference between meeting the standard, that's at the school level. So the overall rating is meets standard, exceeds standard, does not meet, falls far below, above standard will be thrown in there. And right now, all of the schools operated by the charter holder have to meet or exceed in the most recent, the two most recent fiscal years in order to meet. We kind of went back and forth on this issue, and it just seemed that if all of the schools meet in the most recent year, we, you know, should we be requiring that school to do additional things or show progress when they have shown, they're all meeting in the most recent year. So we've changed it to, you meet the board's academic performance expectations as a charter holder if all schools operated by the charter holder receive an overall rating of meets, above, or exceed standard in the most recent fiscal year. A charter holder that has one or more schools that receives an overall rating of does not meet or falls far below standard in the most recent year shall demonstrate the charter holder's progress toward the academic performance expectations set forth in the academic framework. For demonstrating sufficient progress, so we've really changed the DSP process. And if you look at the proposal and the framework, you'll notice that reviewing implementation of plans and systems is no longer in the framework. And what we struggled with was to determine, you know, what is the board's role with reviewing improvement plans. Within statute, the Department of Ed clearly has a role designated in statute to review implementation of improvement plans at certain times. But then also, how is that information used, and is it valuable to schools and to the board to be collecting evidence on implementation of improvement plans? And when is that information more valuable than the actual outcomes that the school is seeing? And so what we've done is really taken out evaluation of implementation of plans and systems and said that we will review in any year that a school is not meeting, we will review their progress by looking at the change in the actual measures from year to year that are included in the overall rating. So has your AREF letter grade improved or gone down? Has your improvement status changed from year to year? And so we're thinking about this for the first 2 years that a school does not meet the board's standard. We would be monitoring the change in those measures and then defining failure to demonstrate sufficient progress as not meeting the standard for 3 consecutive years. So it is only when a school has not met, has been a DRF school or in school improvement for 3 consecutive years that they have failed to demonstrate sufficient progress. And if you remember getting back to the beginning and the charter board laws, it talks about for renewal, for 5-year intervals, and then just for annual monitoring, evaluating whether the charter schools meet or make sufficient progress. So we think it's important to define how you make sufficient progress, or here what we're doing is defining failure to make sufficient progress. And then that information, the findings, would be used at the following times. So right now, I mean, statute allows the board to revoke a charter at any time if they fail to meet or make sufficient progress. But this proposal would use that information at the following time. So if the school has failed to meet, if a charter school operated by the charter holder has failed to meet the standard for three consecutive years during five-year interval reviews when considering contract renewal, upon receipt of information that a charter school has been assigned an F letter grade, because if you remember, statute requires the board to take action to revoke or restore a failing school. And then when considering disciplinary action against a school that has breached one or more provisions of its charter contract or has violated state or federal law.
So then, so if I'm understanding this then, so all that documentation and paperwork that schools had to do for a DSP, mm-hmm. we would just be eliminating that,
right.
that piece of it, but we would then, so it would be more up to the school of how they're gonna kind of, I guess, get their house in order to move the needle, you know, with their students, and that we would gauge it by
the actual improvement and the overall rating.
So basically their rating is, yeah. So the proof's in the kind of the pudding of, is their rating getting better, are their test scores getting better, versus making them go through this exercise of documenting everything and mm-hmm. then we tell them if it's good or not, and you know, the whole thing. So it's really taking out a lot of that and kind of punitive paperwork on it, and getting just to like, what are your results? So this will be more kind of results driven. You're either getting it done or you're not. Mm-hmm. And using the what's coming out of ADE and what their test results are and what their scoring is what's the driver? Is that how I'm understanding this?
Yeah, and what we've seen is that the existing DSP process is not connected to the overall rating. So a school can demonstrate, a charter holder can demonstrate sufficient progress right now, but not actually meet the board's expectations in a year or 2 years or 3 years. And just think it would be clearer for our charter holders to understand how to demonstrate sufficient progress and what the board's expectation is when it's actually aligned to the board's expectations, as demonstrated in the overall ratings.
I have two clarifications, I think. You were talking about something with 2 years, Whitney, and I think I just missed it, because I see three consecutive years, and I think I understand that. I get the most current year. There was something in your explanation about 2 years.
Yeah, I think I was just mentioning that in the first... the 2 years. So right now in the board's existing framework, you have all of your schools have to meet for 2 years in order to meet the board's expectations. And in this proposal, it's just in the most recent year that all of your schools have to meet.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that and like that. And secondly, is this when a school would be able to use those 4 to 6 measures that we were just talking about?
No, the 4 to 6 measures that we were talking about would replace the overall rating based on letter grades and school improvement. So instead of us using their letter grade to determine whether they're meeting, we would, every year, we would use those unique goals to determine whether or not they're meeting their expectations that are set out in their contract.
All right, so then once they need to demonstrate efficient progress, they could choose to do that however they want to. We would just be looking at the results.
So, yeah, they would demonstrate progress by improving the outcomes and the measures that we are holding them accountable to. So if they have...
Okay.
Yeah, okay. On slide 11, review of school improvement plans. So the board statute requires that within 90 days of receiving a D letter grade, a charter holder to present at a public meeting to its sponsor their improvement plan. They have to submit an improvement plan to the Department of Ed as part of school improvement. Also, the schools identified for improvement. D, F schools at this point would also be, would also have an improvement plan with the department. And then schools under Title I that are focus or priority, targeted or comprehensive support, would also be submitting an improvement plan. But while we don't want to evaluate implementation of an improvement plan, we still think it's valuable that we are making sure that our charter schools are complying with their requirements under statute to submit complete improvement plans to the department. And so we, this proposal, the board hasn't, at least in the past couple of years, actually been having charter schools present their improvement plans at a public meeting. And even when it was, they weren't presenting their improvement plan. We wouldn't have 60 charter schools get up and present their improvement plan to the board, but we would actually have at the board meeting whether or not, you know, the charter schools that were required to, that were labeled a D, did submit a copy of their improvement plan to the board. If we do have a copy, we would like to evaluate that improvement plan to ensure that it includes all of the required elements as statutory required and defined by the State Board of Ed based on criteria adopted by the board. So we would use the guidance that's created by ADE for the school improvement plan requirements to develop criteria of how we will evaluate whether or not they have submitted a complete improvement plan, and then provide that feedback and those findings to the charter holder. And then if the plan is not in compliance and does not include all of the required elements, the charter holder would appear before the board for consideration of corrective action and be provided the opportunity to respond. So essentially, for our schools that have to submit an improvement plan to the department doesn't necessarily have the resources to be reviewing all of those plans and isn't required to review those plans until year three of the school being a D. So we want to make sure that we're providing that oversight for our charter schools that we sponsor, making sure that they are submitting complete improvement plans that are in line with the guidance that's required, that's established and required by the department, and that we are providing them that feedback every year that they're required to do it. To ensure compliance and then to provide that additional support so that they don't get 3 years down the road having had an improvement plan with the department, maybe they're not Title I, no one's reviewing implementation, and then they get to a point where they haven't met for three consecutive years and they, no one's really looked at their improvement plan. But this wouldn't be used in determining whether or not they meet or make progress towards the board's expectations. It's really just to, like I said, to check for compliance with their statutory obligations and then to provide them sort of that support and feedback, have someone actually look through their plan and make sure it complies with the requirements.
This is Carol. I think that makes such sense. And particularly, I think eliminating the evaluation of how they're doing in the process is a fabulous idea. It's too intrusive, and actually what we're interested in are the outcomes.
So is there a format of what they have to, for the improvement plan? So there would be consistency amongst like what everyone's submitting?
Yep. Okay. The department establishes guidance every year, and they have to have a certain number of SMART goals that are included in their plan that have to follow certain requirements and a certain number of strategies and action steps.
Okay. Just in clarification, the statute indicates that the components of the improvement plan are identified by the State Board of Education.
No, I like that, because I was worried that, like, I could just write a one piece of paper, and say, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and then the next school submits 50 pages, and then how do we, kind of fairly assess those, But if there's a form, a prescribed format, then I really like this.
And the strategies and the goals are supposed to align with exiting improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and I'm with Carol. I like that we're putting more emphasis on outcomes and giving the schools what sounds like more of a latitude to get those outcomes and not being so focused on, kind of the getting in the weeds of how they're gonna do it, but just having the focus on outcomes, because I think that's what we all want.
So another thing that the subcommittee asked me to do that we've been working on is to make the five-year interval review more impactful. So now we're looking at, for all charter schools, we currently do the compliance check, review academic, operational, and financial performance. So what is their rating on the different frameworks? And then we've created this academic systems review to evaluate alignment to the contract. So the charter contract requires that a charter school adopt curriculum that's aligned to state standards and to design a method to measure pupil progress towards those standards. And so we just feel that within the five-year interval review, it would be important to do sort of a checkup, somewhat like the first year site visit, but making sure that the program of instruction is aligned to what was in their contract, that their curriculum aligns to state standards, that they're using data to inform instruction. So some of those basic things. This isn't designed to be onerous, like a half day site visit is what we're envisioning. We've set out some criteria that's attached in the framework here, and we can add more details as we get more into it. We're thinking that for next year, we would pilot the academic systems review to see, how long does it actually take us to do this? What things should we be asking for when we're there? How, what shouldn't we be asking for? What is relevant and what isn't? I believe we have a lot of five-year interval reviews next year. I think it was close to 80. So doing this on that scale in the first year, I don't believe would be the best idea, but piloting that as part of the five-year interval review would be valuable to the board. That information would be valuable to the board at five-year intervals.
Whitney?
Yes? Yeah? Yes?
Sorry, just like pointing out, but in any case, I agree that this is a good move. I love the five-year interval review becoming more important and relevant. My thought is, can we add something about governance or how their board structure is? I know we asked about it, but could that be something that we add to the five-year interval?
Yes, definitely.
I think the superintendent would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Can you note what we need to add?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Moving on to renewal, slide 13. This is just statutory language lifted, just to show that what the board's required to do for renewal. It's a 15-year initial contract, 18 months prior to the expiration of that contract. The sponsor shall notify the charter school that the charter school may apply for renewal and shall make the renewal application available to the charter school. So the board has to allow all of its charters to apply for renewal and let them know at least 12 months prior of its intent not to renew the request for renewal. The board may deny the request for renewal if the charter has failed to meet or make sufficient progress toward the academic performance expectations. meet the operational performance expectations, complete any obligations of the contract, or comply with state law. So again, we've defined what meeting the expectation is. We've defined failure to make sufficient progress. And have really taken renewal out of the framework, since we don't have any separate criteria for meeting or making progress at renewal. Whereas in the existing framework, if you're not meeting, you have to demonstrate sufficient progress, have a site visit, do certain things at the time of renewal. That might be different than if you're just an annual monitoring. Here we're saying, if renewal is based on meeting or making sufficient progress, well, we've already defined what meeting and making progress is. And that's basically what's summarized on page 14. For expansion, try to align this with the replication, but looking solely at the charter schools operated under a charter holder. So the proposal would be that a charter holder is only eligible to apply for expansion if 75% or more of the schools operated meet the standard in the most recent year. Since now the standard is that you are not a DRF school or in school improvement, we just felt that a school that is DRF or in school improvement is not in a position to be expanding. And then the board would have discretion for those who see B and A schools that are requesting expansion that are eligible to apply, the board would have discretion in determining whether or not to approve the expansion. And then we didn't change the replication criteria. That concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Great. I've only got three requests to speak, so if there's anyone else out there, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. So starting with the overachiever that got her slip in first, Ildi.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board. For the record, I'm Ildi Lasker-Kerr. I'm the Vice President of Academics for the Charter Schools Association. And I just want to speak for a few minutes around this in support of the recommendations and the modifications that you have in front of you today. This has been a long time where we've been talking about how do we think about continuous improvement in your systems, and are happy to say that we've had lots of conversations with staff around ways to make this a meaningful process, but make it clear. So just thinking about a few ideas and suggestions for the potential kind of labels in terms of thinking about where you are, I might throw out and suggest that C schools are at standard, B schools are above standard, and A schools exceed standard, because I think what you're saying is a C school is hitting our standard, but to be able to distinguish and delineate, to member Mendoza's point, that the difference between a B and an A school I think is important. I do also support the idea of a substitute standard for a particular set of schools and that application. I think it's important in communication to make it clear that all schools will get a letter grade, that are going to get a letter grade, and that this is a proactive alternative for schools. And then to align that to reporting at the interval time makes sense given the full scope of the presentation that you've seen today. I do want to caution that every year, no matter how great the data is at the Department of Ed, there are always not rated and pending schools. And so even if there's a model for all schools to kind of be slotted into, because of the availability of data, there may be a time when you're still stuck with a few not rated schools. And thinking through how those not rated schools would then, you know, probably need to be slotted into this other substitute evaluation criteria and for how long that might be the case. Because best laid intentions are everybody gets a letter grade, but the fact of the matter is there's always a few that might not. With thinking around the demonstration of sufficient progress, I think that that's one of the most key levers to your policy implementation here. Making it clear that the way that charter schools are going to be held accountable is linked to letter grades, but the way that they show progress as improvement in the letter grade is actually increasing the level of rigor of your expectation of your portfolio. And I think that is key to improving the overall quality of the sector, but making it incredibly clear in the communication that that's what's happening. Because to Whitney's point, you know, schools have been able to demonstrate progress by the implementation of their plan when their actual outcomes haven't, you know, caught up to that. And so this is a pretty seismic shift in your expectations, one that we support, but want to make sure that it's clear when we're communicating it out to schools. And then as always, we're always happy to help and support both the board and our member schools in understanding, you know, the changes and the shifts. And I know staff will put together lots of, you know, compliance and clear documentation, but if there's anything that we can be of service to you around communications and supporting understanding and transitioning to this new system, we are here to help. So I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them, but again, in support of the recommendations that you're seeing today.
No, and I just want to say thank you for the association. I know all your members that have participated and given feedback, you know, to the staff and, you know, to Whitney and to the board. I think it's been invaluable. And so I just really want to thank you for being a proactive role player in all of this. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have Doug Pike.
For the record, I'm Doug Pike, and I am no longer employed by EdKey. I'm with Lehman Academy at this point. However, having participated on behalf of the deaf school at EdKey and the homeless school, I still am bringing some thoughts from them to you. I want to express appreciation for the work done on this academic framework and for the input that was accepted from the schools. As was just previously said, I think there is a very positive shift that is occurring, and we appreciate it. I did want to go back and address some of the member comments and questions with reference to the subgroups and what is being done. Clearly, the work is not done at this point in time. We're going to have to see how this works. We may need to come back and make some small alterations to it. And that's accepted, I think, by the schools. In looking at and express appreciation to Whitney's participation with ADE as they go to the State Board of Education in developing the criteria for the grades, I would note that many of the schools have participated in commenting on the belief that we needed a different test or a different standard. And we did have passed by the legislature the opportunity for schools to bring forward other instruments that they would prefer to use. In particular, I know that the deaf school has been using a specific testing instrument. It may come to be in the future as we work through this that rather than coming to the charter board with goals that they're going to meet, that they have identified an instrument that they will be able to submit and use through ADE in the profiles to create a grade that's acceptable. We don't know how this is going to turn out. The schools are going to work with both the state board and the charter board to see how that works. But the fact that we have put in the mechanism into your academic performance standards as proposed is appreciated and something that they'll be looking forward to work with. I would make that same comment in the work that I've done with Senator Begay in reference to the Native American populations. He had been working with some of the schools with reference to a testing instruments that more closely identified some of the needs and the progress. So I don't believe that that work is done at this point, that we don't know how that's going to work out and have an outcome for those particular schools. But I think there are a number of charter schools that are looking at the opportunities and recognizing that this proposal on performance standards is a work in progress and a good step in the right direction to achieving a better way to allow them to serve the populations that they've identified that they're interested in serving. And so I would simply bring that to your attention and hope that that we join with the State Board of Education and ADE in that continuing work to accomplish that. Otherwise, again, express my appreciation for the work that's been done and very supportive of this.
Thank you. All right, batting cleanup is Dr. Schlesman today.
So for the record, I'm Amy Schlesman, the founding president and currently advocacy chair for the Alternative Education Consortium. And I'm glad that slide 3 is being displayed at this time, because that's where I wanted to start, is we're very encouraged to see the flexibility in this about the alternative and accommodation schools. The consortium represents both. Accommodation schools happen to be the county schools that are the same as the alternative schools that are at districts and charters. And we've been advocating since last June, so that has actually a year now, for unique achievement profiles for alternative and accommodation schools, because the State Board of Ed has recognized that we serve a unique student population. So it would make sense that we have unique achievement profiles, and that kind of flexibility does exist here. I wanted to make a couple comments about slide 7, because there was quite a bit of discussion about that. And I wanted to mention that we do have AEC members, Alternative Ed Consortium members, who are at the schools with special populations that are not necessarily included within the Arizona definition, because Arizona has a pretty limited definition. We have 6 categories in Arizona, and I think Whitney mentioned that. Some states have many more, like Colorado has around 17, I don't have the exact number, and the same with Texas. The concern is the 70%. I know that's really good for consistency, but it's a little bit arbitrary, because the numbers that states set for eligibility for, and they call them AECs, alternative education campuses nationally, Colorado does have 95%. Whitney mentioned that, but they have 3 times as many categories. And South Carolina has 85%. Texas has 75, and Texas is comparable to Colorado on the number of categories that they have. We're with California. Ohio and Florida have 51%. So maybe that's the sweet spot, that you have, you know, that's just a little bit more than a majority. But I worked with a charter school, and I noticed that, and these were in the days of the level of adequate academic performance. I don't think anyone here, other than those of us that are at charter schools, remember that. But I noticed even for that school, the special ed average for alternative schools was 17%. And when that school got above, like to 20 or even 25, it was harder for that school to meet certain criteria. So I would just keep that in mind and continue that discussion. Because New Mexico has 20%. And actually, that was about what I saw. That's what researchers do, is they kind of look for patterns. And I kept looking at these things on my wall and thinking, what's going on? And then I realized that was what it was, that they had the higher special ed population. So that's just something to keep in mind.
And Dr. Sultan, can I ask you, because that's interesting, that like, you know, how many criteria we have versus other states. So like, what are we missing? Like, what are there some glaring things that we're, I'm trying to wrap my head around, like what, why 17.7?
It was actually a very interesting discussion because some of my colleagues from the consortium remember when we had these discussions with ADE, the students with an IEP is in almost every state, except they said, well, there are students with IEPs at every school, but it's just for this designation of alternative education campus. English language learners is sometimes a designation. I'm wondering if that would address some of the Native American populations. Homeless is also a frequent category. So we're seeing that and I know we're in Arizona, we're not in Colorado, we're not in some of these other, Texas or some of these other states, but and compliments to ASBCS staff for putting this together because they have anticipated that. They've said, oh, you know, if there is a real obvious category that is not included in the Arizona definition, maybe we'll address it in another way. And actually, I have a paper, a research paper, so I did a little matrix of the key definitions from states, so I can share that with Whitney for her to get to the board. I don't have that with me today. So, that was that point. And then on slide 8, when we were talking about the board's expectation, I would suggest that rather than the most recent year, maybe talk about one of the two most recent years, because schools have ups and downs. And I've written, and I know those days are gone, thank goodness. You know, I've written DSPs for schools that missed by less than 1 point, and that wasn't even the standard error of the mean. So that might allow a little bit more flexibility, because maybe and that's the part I still don't understand, so maybe at another point, either the Charter School Association will clarify exactly what DSPing is, because I was encouraged with the 3 year. The 3 consecutive years meant the school did not or failed to demonstrate sufficient progress.
So in this proposal, it's you're not required to do anything, submit anything extra. It's just that when one of your schools doesn't meet the standard in the most recent year that we have an overall rating, we will tell you you're not meeting the standard, and now we're going to make sure we look next year to see if you improved or not.
All right. Thank you. And actually this is great timing because we're having a full consortium meeting a week from Friday. So I will be going back to those members and saying, this is what we heard, and actually several of us are here, so it won't just be Amy saying, this is what I heard. Well, several of us can say, this is what it was. So that kind of answers my question. So that means that by looking at the indicators, it's not 100%, because that message came across very clear in the focus groups from the charter holders.
This proposal just completely eliminates that whole process.
Okay, yeah. And actually, I was going to compliment you on that because I was very encouraged to see that the guidance document is back to 16 pages rather than however many pages it was it currently is. So, again, I echo some other sentiments that have been very positive. This looks like a really good direction, and I'm very encouraged. And anything that we as the consortium can do to help get this information out to schools, we would be happy to do that too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, so we had some last minute slackers that got in on the wire. So Anita Mendoza.
Good morning, Madam President, Board, and staff.
I hope nothing we said prompted you to have to get up.
No, because actually I left mine on the table and it didn't get collected. Oh. But no, you know, I don't need to justify. It's all good. I want to also thank the board for your consideration. I think many of the things that have been introduced during focus groups, during your study groups, have all been reflected in the proposal. Some of it in different places than we originally talked about, but most of it is there. Having been on the State Board of Education, it's very interesting for me to watch the evolution of this process of accountability and oversight. It's great to know that it's not a static process. Policy can change and adapt to what is currently going on in the world of education. I think that kind of speaks maybe a little bit to the 70% or the number of groups that may qualify that don't meet the Arizona definitions. Because I think in all of our schools, we are seeing new subgroups popping up. The school that I work with currently had this rash of students with mental and emotional health issues this year, which involved suicide attempts and other sorts of things that seemed to be kind of catching. And suddenly, you know, there was 10, 15, 20% of the population dealing with some significant mental health issues that did not have IEPs and probably, you know, are not going to go maybe in that direction. But this allows a school to look at a situation that may apply, that may not be historic and may not even continue far into the future, but still something that they may be dealing with that population for 3 or 4 years consecutively. So I appreciate that. I think the only thing I want to specifically comment on is the 5-year renewal. I myself, being a community member and having been in this game for a long time, I'm old. I get to do Medicare this year. I guess I'm excited about that. I think I'm excited about that. I do believe the governance is a very important issue. I think politically, I think to the community, the fact that we are stewards of public money and we continue to get those questions about being private, being, you know, public, being nonprofit, being for-profit, I think it's extremely important that we continue to look at the governance structure, that our schools do have legitimate boards of directors, that they do follow open meeting laws, that there are multiple members on those boards. I think that's really important, and I'm glad that you seem willing to include that in that 5-year renewal process. So thank you again for all of your very hard work. I also support the proposal and feel that most of us down in Tucson have been very pleased with your responsiveness, and thank you for that consideration.
Thank you for your feedback and for participating in the process. We appreciate it.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. All right, Ms. Olson. Better be good.
Mine was not out there waiting, so I am the official slackiest of all the slackers. Thank you, first of all, for all of your hard work and being here and listening to everybody, and it's great to see that, so I really appreciate that. I actually just have some questions as far as the logistics of it go. So when are all of the schools given that Department of Ed rating?
So right now we're in transition.
Yeah.
And we don't have the letter grades for the accountability.
Right.
So we're
right
now under the Every Student Succeed Act under fiscal year 17. Mm-hmm. So the first year that we will have letter grades under ESSA will be the school year 17-18.
Okay.
Right now, we will be providing guidance out to these schools and letting them know, but we will be going out for an RFI, request for information, regarding the accountability system. And anyone, even parents, teachers, anyone who wants to respond to the RFI and what they would want included in the accountability system may.
Okay.
And then the ag group, the advisory.
Accountability advisory group?
Yeah, they will be reviewing the accountability proposals and putting together a recommendation for the state board.
Okay.
And then they will also be taking in feedback too,
right,
from public stakeholder meetings and I know Yvonne Metcalf, who is the Chief Accountability Officer, she'll be going around and getting that information. But right now, our timeline looks like we'll be going to the State Board for their approval probably around late fall, so November, December. And but before then, we'll be getting public comment as well.
Okay. So can I'm assuming that all of this is just on hold until the letter grades are released, or are we going to use the other designation, the Title I, that meets criteria? Or is this, I guess, for us that are in kind of limbo, we're a little bit in purgatory, which I belong, let's face it, purgatory is a big surprise. I thought it would be worse. So, but for all of us that are there, like, what steps do we have? Or do we stay in kind of the DSP? Do we operate under the old system?
So for this, what the subcommittee recommended to the board and what the board approved was that this would be for FY18 ongoing. And then what had been approved was for 17 to use the existing ratings and DSP process for FY17. I would bring to the board in June, along with this proposal, a recommendation that in 17, these changes be implemented for 17, but without giving the overall rating in 17, and using what we do have, which is a state designation for school improvement, to determine whether or not you're meeting the board's for things like expansion, mm-hmm. when we're looking at, and then when we're looking at improvement plans. So if you're required to submit an improvement plan to the department next year, you submit it to us and we do the review for completeness and give it back out to you. But we wouldn't be using letter grades from 2014 or our ratings from 2014 at all moving forward.
Okay, so those don't get like retro. C is now meets the standard, so no. Okay, so then we're just going to kind of continue in that where we are, just with the same systems, I'm assuming?
No, the recommendation would be that we're not doing the DSP as it is now isn't any longer, doesn't exist. We wouldn't continue to do that next year.
Like if we're going for an enrollment cap, yeah. So always.
Yeah, I think three more years
with us.
I think we would provide to the board in this next year, and subject to board approval, what we have available, the most recent information we have available, which would be, are you in school improvement?
Okay. So it would be from the, it would still be driven by what the Department of Ed, okay,
right.
What categories they put each school in, mm-hmm. that what would drive it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, that's my understanding, and I think what we're trying to do is how do we streamline this stuff as quickly as possible to get some of these burdens off, and again get focused back on results.
Yeah.
So we can kind of work on that, but just know that our intent is
absolutely.
As one board member, you're gonna have the whole board approve it, but our intent is to try to get these implemented as quickly as possible to kind of get the focus where we think it should be,
right.
Which is on your outcomes.
Right. And I totally agree and appreciate it, and I also appreciate the fact that it does take a while, and this stuff takes a while, and it should, because we've asked for, give schools time, so we have to give time to everybody. So if it's immediate and knee-jerk, it's usually not good. So I appreciate that. I just wanted to know, just logistically, because I have to go back to my school and look at 13 different administrators and say, yes, you do have to keep doing that, or no, you know, as far as the DSP and the site visits and stuff. So they just kind of wanted to know what that looks like. So each school will get that school improvement determination in June?
We don't know. I don't know the deadline or the timeline for that.
Do you want your Prop 123 money?
Yeah.
Or do you want?
If I had to prioritize.
Yeah. I don't know
when
those labels will be out.
Okay. All right. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
All right, if there's nothing else for the good of the order, we'll see you, most of you probably all at our June 13th meeting.
I think we need a motion.
Or do you need a motion?
And Kim, maybe you can help me with this, but to approve this concept to take to the full board so that we can make the revisions requested and revise any other errors that we find in the draft that was provided to you. before we take it to the full board.
Would you say so moved?
I think her language is probably appropriate to say a motion to approve the concept for the academic performance framework as discussed today, with instructions to staff to consider those additional areas that came up.
Who wants to repeat what Kim just said?
I'll move to approve the academic performance or the academic framework as presented with the modifications as identified. Do you need me to stop?
And bring to the board?
And bring to the board for final approval.
All right, is there a second from the phone?
I second.
Thank you, Freddie. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we have our motion. Thank you everyone for being here today, and see you all June 13th, our board meeting, right?
Yes.
We'll see you all June 13th. Thank you.